Hello, creepies, and welcome to another middle-aged mini-episode on the Middle-Aged and Creeped Out podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hello there, creepies. Welcome to Middle-Aged Mini number 33. Nate is your sound engineer, and we are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we are middle-aged and creeped out. What's going on, gentlemen?
Nothing too much. What's going on with you?
I always step over Nate. I'm doing it again.
See, when you say I ask you what's going on, and you say nothing much, what's going on with you? See, I take it as you're asking me.
I know.
And I'm ready to reply,
Nate,
but then...
And I'm leaving Nate out.
Yeah,
and
then he's looking at Nate.
And he looks like a lost puppy.
I don't think Nate's lost. He's just...
I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. I keep stepping on him. I'm like, nope. I'll talk first.
You know, we're close to our 1 year, right? And we still haven't figured out.
We'll get it
one of these days.
How to introduce ourselves. I'm just going to stay quiet over here.
I'm going to go, what was that?
Was it me?
Was it you?
I was going to say,
I was establishing the gurgle. I was like, wait a minute. I was close to doing it, but I didn't.
You wanted to sit silent, so you got the gurgle.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Is this how this episode is going to go? That's what I want to know.
We should do one with just silence. Make you feel awkward yet?
Finish the story.
Yeah, exactly. They'd probably like that. We could listen to this all day.
Like, pull the plug.
Those idiots aren't saying a word. So you guys are doing well?
Yes.
Good.
Doing good.
Good job.
Is this where I speak?
Speak words of wisdom. Speaking words of wisdom.
We're going to have cue cards
right now.
I'm going to hold it up. Nate, go. We're going to have lights. We got to put lights up. And so when I want you to speak, I'm just going to light it up.
How about it? What about electricity where you just shock us? Okay, it's my turn.
I'm doing fine. I'm doing great.
Why does Sean and Nate always sound like they're being shocked into submission? Because they are. Maniacal laugh.
Yeah. Ready for your part. creepies, thank you for joining us for Middle Aged Mini number 33, Larry Bird's number.
Yes.
Anything you want to say special before we get into it? Nothing?
I cannot believe we're at 33. This is crazy.
I know.
Two threes.
That's true.
Like you said, Larry Bird.
Two threes. That's right. Larry Legend. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Sean, what are we going to talk about for this great episode?
We are going to talk about the legendary King Arthur. And it is Nate's pick.
Yes.
You know, it's not crazy, so it's not my pick. It's not super spooky, so
heard
it's
about
not Todd's. So King Arthur, great choice.
Real or not real?
I don't think we're going to figure that out. Are we going to figure that out?
Yeah, we're going to try.
I don't think the authorities of this situation could figure it out.
Did you say authority?
Authorities.
Like you said better
scientist
than
or whoever.
Right.
Historians.
Historians, yeah.
Gotcha.
Everybody's on the fence. Some people say he was real. Some people say he wasn't. Some say Camelot existed. Some say it didn't. Some say Excalibur existed. Some say it didn't.
I heard
Merlin was real. Some say that he isn't.
I heard Camelot was a silly place. Sorry. Yeah. That's Monty Python, Holy Grail reference. Have to bring that up at least once in this talk.
Was there a round table?
I don't think so. They did the dancing and everything. No.
It's a great movie.
I don't think there was, actually. No, that was not highlighted. Just the coconuts.
Another classic movie. Yeah.
So we'll step back. We'll get a little bit of foundation with King Arthur. Just kind of go over a little bit. So King Arthur was a legendary British leader who, according to medieval historians or histories and romances, led the defense of Britain against Saxon invaders in the late 5th and early 6th centuries. The details of Arthur's story are mainly composed of Welsh and English folklore and literary invention, and modern historians generally agree that he is unhistorical. So there's that on Wikipedia, right? Mm-hmm. The sparse historical background of Arthur is gleaned from various sources, including the Annals Cambria, the Historia Britonum, and the writings of Gildas. That all sounds made up. That's why they say it.
It did sound made up.
Unhistorical. Arthur's name also occurs in early poetic sources, such as Ye Gododin, Arthur is a central figure in the legends making up the matter of Britain. The legendary Arthur developed as a figure of international interest largely through the popularity of Geoffrey of Monmouth. His fanciful and imaginative 12th century Historia Regum Britannia, which is the history of the kings of Britain. In some Welsh and Breton tales and poems that date from before this work, Arthur appears either as a great warrior defending Britain from human and supernatural enemies. That's interesting. Or as a magical figure of folklore, sometimes associated with the Welsh otherworld, which is called Anwen. How much of Geoffrey Historia's was adapted from such earlier sources rather than invented by him is unknown.
I don't.
He made Stonehenge.
Possible. He also, well, in Hellboy, he eradicated all the monsters. Remember that? Through a dimensional portal. Movies, yeah. Him and Merlin, they got those guys out of here.
I don't remember that part. I mean, I don't remember that character for some reason, but I've seen those movies.
It's fun how they bring him into that. You know, it's like King Arthur has shown up in a lot of works of fiction. He shows up in movies and all that kind of stuff.
Merlin was in Transformers.
Transformers. Wow. That is really, yeah. That's
was
true.
Was that the last night?
Yeah.
The last one?
Right.
I've that's seen true. The first Transformers, but that's been years, so I don't know.
The last night. You're right about that. That is really cool, actually. it is. Yeah. They did a good job with that. I actually hadn't even thought about that with all the stuff we looked into. So.
And there's also a movie that came out maybe 3 or 4 years ago. We saw it at the movie theater, and then we watched it again. Not recently, like in the last few weeks, but it was a kid movie, and it referenced, the whole thing was about King Arthur and Excalibur.
The kid gets the
stone.
It was
a British movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I saw that. That's a pretty good movie.
Good movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Had Lady of the Lake. And had the bathtub. She's holding the sword.
Yeah. It's like, woo.
Yeah.
I do like this movie. It's First Night, back from 1995. It has Sean Connery, Richard Gere.
Good.
Yeah, Sean Connery plays King Arthur. Richard Gere was Lancelot. And Julia Ormond, which I love. She's fantastic, as Guinevere. And Ben Cross was Maligant. So the bad guy. But they've definitely had this character show up. One of his names is the Once and Future King. I always thought that was kind of cool. The other thing is there are questions on whether he became an immortal being and whether he was immortal, because supposedly once he pulled Excalibur out of the stone, that made him immortal, at least in some of the folklore and tales. I thought that was interesting. Here's one thing. When you watch a lot of these videos, I watched some that were just real quick and kind of overviews of King Arthur, and I watched some that were kind of deeper documentaries. And the interesting thing is that it goes back at least 1,000 years that the English thought that this was actually part of their history. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so they said even up through Queen Victoria that she was still wanting, this mural made about Arthur's life and how they were respecting that part of English, what they thought was history instead of like folklore or myth. Mm-hmm. There was also, there was a Prince Arthur, that he was supposed to usher in the new Arthurian age. And it wasn't like some, to them, it wasn't made up. It was a continuation of the ideas behind, King Arthur. And they see him as a Celtic superhero, which I thought was kind of cool. I never thought of him.
I mean, it makes sense, I guess. And latch on to it.
But it wouldn't have been, back then, it wouldn't have been England. It was Britain. So it was a barbaric. So they said, number one, there wouldn't have been like chainmail, and there wouldn't have been all this, you know, these cool swords, and they wouldn't have had all this, you know, the battles would have been a lot more archaic. Like we're talking about the Celts, you know, they're way back there. And they were, fighting off the Saxons, which we're talking about the Germans, what became the Germans, you know. And they were invading. So it was still very, like, prehistory to us, like not thinking about what modern warfare would look like. And we look at it as a very romantic, you know, in that First Night, it looks very romantic. And that's what it's become, is romanticized. But if you really think about it, they're saying that King Arthur, if he was a real person, that he would have been probably a tyrant, you know, trying to keep together all the tribes of the Britons. And so he may not have been a very good guy. He certainly probably wouldn't have been a super duper attractive guy like they make him out to be. But what they also think is that he was made from several different historical figures, and they just made him into this
I just meshed him together.
Superhero, and more of an idea. And then as the Arthurian legend went on, they added more stuff to it just to make it sound neater and neater, and you know, to give it that longevity.
One article here says that if he did exist, he would have been more like a warrior than a king.
Right.
And that's, so that goes along with what you were saying. More, yeah. Not as refined and, like you said, a tyrant. And, yeah. A little more rough around the edges.
Well, he started with, like, the poetry, they said, and then they were trying to do, like, historical documentation. But in this period is the Dark Ages, or a Dark Age, and not as much is written. So what is, you know, you have to take it face value because there aren't really documents to back up what they're saying is history here. So that's interesting, but it is, you have to take it with a grain of salt that, like I said, a lot of it has been fabricated or kind of, you know, again, romanticized to a large degree.
I see here, like it says, the legendary King Arthur and the knight. Tradition has it that after King Uther's death,
Uther Pendragon,
There was no king ruling all of England. Merlin had placed a sword in a stone, saying that whoever drew it out would be king. Arthur did not know his true status. Growing up, the young Arthur pulled the sword from the stone, and Merlin had him crowned as the King of Britain. This led to a rebellion by 11 rulers, which Arthur put down. He then married Guinevere, whose father gave him the Round Table.
There you go.
He gets you something real nice, like a nice little round table.
I got you a round table. It's very lovely.
We got these matching chairs.
Bring me back a shrubbery.
Well, it's interesting because where, at least where England, England was more, it was organized when the Romans were there. But the Romans were pushed out. And so from being pushed out, that was... that's where the Britons were, you know, and then there were the Vikings tried to take it over, the Saxons. So all these, you know, for the longest time, England was, you know, just basically in a state of
floating.
Yeah, exactly. It was not the empire that we know it to be or has been recently. A lot of infighting and struggles, and one ruler would kind of reign, or maybe several of them, and then there'd be a lot of, like I said, infighting and that struggle and warfare. So it was just, it would have been a really ugly time, quite honestly.
So Arthur ended up in a battle with his nephew, Mordred. Arthur delivered the fatal blow to Mordred in the battle, but in the process, Arthur was struck a mortal blow himself. It was then that he commanded Sir Bedivere to throw Excalibur back into the lake.
Okay, so that battle was after he pulled the sword out.
Okay, yeah, he had Excalibur at that time.
So staying with that story, then I thought he was supposed to be immortal. So why would, if he was the one that was able to get the sword out of the stone? But then it didn't.
I think there's different veins.
There are different veins.
See what I'm saying? When I did the research, that's why, listeners, I said, I'm going to rely on you guys because I was all confused.
Well, I listened to, like, Uther Pendragon was supposedly, he wanted to have relations with the queen. And so he made, supposedly, he made Merlin, changed him to look like the king. And so he was able to impregnate her. And so the baby that was born was Arthur. He didn't, you know, the king found out what happened. And so he didn't want Arthur as a baby. He ended up, Arthur didn't have a father at that point. So that Merlin felt guilty because he was part of that, you know, all of the trickery. And so he, it's said that he raised Arthur. And that's how he goes through the whole Excalibur thing. But it connects, what I understand as part of the lore, is the Lady of the Lake, she is supposed to be this, because Merlin is seen as a magician, a hermit, possibly a druid, right? And so they say, you know, we see him as this fancy magician, but he was probably more of a woodsman, you know, somebody that's pretty dirty and, you know, a person of the land and a pagan. Because the pagans, they say the Britons during King Arthur would have just recently been Christianized, and that would have been through the Romans as well influence, and then the Saxons coming in were still pagan, so it was still a Christianity pagan fight. So that gets complicated. And Lady of the Lake is supposed to be somebody that is seen as a figure that she supposedly raised Lancelot. And so Lancelot and Arthur would have been raised together as boys. And then it gets even more complicated because Arthur grows up and he is to marry Guinevere, but he's not really in love with her. And he's in love with someone else. And Guinevere is in love with Lancelot. And it gets to be all these love triangles, which they normally use the love triangle of Lancelot and Arthur and Guinevere. And then Lancelot mm-hmm. ends up being supposedly killed once Arthur finds out about them cheating. So it's very convoluted.
See, before all this, I thought the Lady of the Lake was just kind of neutral. I didn't really know what part she played, where she was leaning.
It gets deeper than like I ever really knew, too.
And on yeah. one side or the other, or what, who she was really
ultimately, I think
with.
She's the protector of Excalibur.
Yes, and the interest, they said historically speaking.
That Merlin conjured up, right? Or no? Or she made Excalibur. I mean, she made it and then protected it. But
I'm
then
not
Merlin
sure
got
who made Excalibur. But
here's the thing with Excalibur: they said historically speaking, there are like areas where warriors would go through, and as a reverence to her, to Lady of the Lake, they would dump in their weapons, and they have found old weaponry that are thrown in some of these lakes. And they said so. It's not out of the realm of possibility that people that in the story she goes. And she's like, she'll go out and get some of this weaponry. And in that process, she found this extraordinary sword that was left there. So there's a lot of mystery behind Excalibur and exactly how it came about. Right. So I'm not that's sure I'm there's a good answer out. For that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's many veins of stories on that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I gotcha.
Because that leads to a Disney movie, Sword in the Stone, that I love too, by the way. But they do a cute version of Excalibur with that, the Sword in the Stone.
I know about it. I've never seen it.
Because that's a different... There's veins where she presents it to him, and she's in the lake, and she has Excalibur, mm-hmm. however she magically created it or got it or whatever. And then there are other ideas that it evolved into it being in a stone with the inscription saying, whoever pulls out this sword
and that's
is
that's what, how
the
I've
true
always
and rightful
known.
King.
Yeah, that's how...
Regarding King Arthur.
The main story of King mm-hmm. Arthur and Excalibur.
Because the more they Christianized it, too, the Holy Grail came into it, because that was supposed to be a big thing that... King Arthur's looking for is the Holy Grail, but that wasn't a part of the original lore. But they say that historically speaking, that when in the 1930s, the Nazis, which are the Germans, that goes back into, you know,
Indiana Jones.
Right. Well, no, I wasn't. I was going to say the Saxons.
Oh, gotcha.
But it says that that was their revenge from the ancient past, mm-hmm. you know, and it's so it's like, that's kind of cool that even as early as or recently as the 1930s that King Arthur myths, because that we talked a little bit when we talked about the occult Hitler, that there was King Arthur and Excalibur reaching backs. And they really did. They were looking for that as a historical
fact.
Because
they were big into that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That.
So they wanted to look at the relics. And that's how they kind of glommed onto the Holy Grail. And they thought that if they could figure out how that tied historically and any of these other artifacts, if they were truly real, and if King Arthur was real, how they were connected and how they could.
Didn't they have something like the Round Table type something,
mm-hmm.
the Germans or some type, like they built
that. They did in that one of the castles where they were trying to resurrect this idea.
The floor was done a certain way. Yeah.
It was very pagan based. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was Knights of the Round.
Definitely influenced.
The Knights of the Round Table is an idea of there's nobody that's over anybody else. So having a round table makes everybody equal, including the king. Mm-hmm. So everybody's ideas
nobody's
are brought,
at the head.
Everybody's brought there. In the movie First Night, I love it because they all of the knights, you know, Lancelot and there's so many of the different, I can't think of all of them, but they all put their swords down. Right. And then they all put, you know, when they sit down, they all have their seat at the table and then they can speak freely. Gawain's one, and there's a ton of knights, but it's just interesting that is kind of a first. Besides the Romans, they had law and rule and things like that, but it was still very dictatorial. But that kind of idea that England came from, you know, it's a monarchy, but there's still that there's a diplomacy to it as well.
Yeah. I don't know if I've seen First Night. I mean,
it's actually real. It's hokey. It's
if I've seen it, it's been
it's a love story kind of, but it's honestly, it's really good.
good. Yeah, I mean, if it's got Sean Connery and who'd you say?
Who's Julie Ormond and Richard Gere. Richard Gere plays Lancelot. Yeah,
gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, I told the guys before we started, I listened to a few videos and did research, and I just got lost. I just couldn't to really form.
It's,
you know, where I, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't sure how much I would contribute, but.
You were talking about Mordred. Mordred is his nephew, but it was, they say that it wasn't really his nephew. There's more.
King Arthur's nephew?
Yeah. Okay. And it was more convoluted than that, but he fell in love with Guinevere. And when King Arthur went to fight or to quest for the Holy Grail or whatever he was doing, that Mordred decided to take over his spot as king. He felt like, and then he announced himself as King of Camelot. And then when Arthur came back, that's when they had the battle where they both were mortally wounded. Yes. King Arthur is taken to, again, if he's apparently wasn't immortal.
Yeah.
So that's, but this is, like I said, this is another
false advertisement.
Another, it is, isn't it? It's another vein of the story. But he was taken to a very holy place that we know of is called Avalon. So that's his final resting place. Mm. Avalon is Welsh, meaning the Isle of Fruit or apple trees, sometimes written. There's different spellings of it. It's a legendary island featured in the Arthurian legend. It appears in Geoffrey of Monmouth's 1136 Historia, the history of the kings of Britain. It's the place where King Arthur's sword Excalibur was made. So that's what this says. It was made, and later where he was taken to recover from being gravely wounded and eventually died.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, like this account here says the Lady of the Lake lives in a castle beneath a lake surrounding the island of Avalon. According to legend, she is most famous for giving Arthur the magical sword Excalibur, and she gave him the sword for fostering Sir Lancelot after his father's death, and then for imprisoning Merlin in a tree.
Poor Merlin.
Yeah.
So when did he have time to do Stonehenge?
And then he became the Keebler Elf, and then he made cookies. What I heard. Yeah,
fudge stripes.
Fudge cookies. Yeah.
See, that just goes against the whole sword out of the stone.
Yeah.
So it's, legend, whatever.
Huh. It's hard to base any factual references because there's multiple different stories of how things happened.
And again, they would always point out in a lot of these things where they, you know, this is the Dark Ages and there's not a lot of historical records. So for me, when you put it all out there, it just doesn't seem like there was truly one person that was King Arthur. Again, maybe it was based on a lot of different characters. Mm. But it was, it's so fun. You know what I mean? Mm. It's like Batman.
It's magical.
You keep telling me there's no Aquaman, but there could be. But you know, it's more of an ideal or a principle.
Should I tell him, Nate?
Don't ruin it for him. Just let him believe.
Don't blow his mind.
But seriously, can you imagine being like the English that for 1,000 years thought the King Arthur was real, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey guys, by the way, we did some investigation. He was made up, you know, or we pretty much contrived him, or he was a symbol of building
something.
Britain building into England and then all the greatness that is now England and all of its history.
I have been looking at some.
Hello.
There's Nate.
Found the mic.
These fun facts. So anyway, says we still don't know where Camelot was located. Historians have tried to identify where King Arthur's mythical kingdom of Camelot was supposed to be. People have proposed various locations across the UK. The candidates include the Welsh village, Carolyn, that's a real, Cadbury Castle in Somerset.
I love their eggs.
Cadbury.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Tintagel, I'm sorry, people in UK, I'm sorry. Castle in Cornwall and the city of Winchester in Hampshire.
Camelot.
They should be proud that I said Hampshire because I've learned that when people say the ire,
Hampshire
or Winchester what's the other word that that Americans or people that
we butcher?
Yeah,
and we so butcher I've, many
Worcestershire sauce.
Well, that's pretty good. You said that. Do you write that down and just practice it?
Yeah, I probably can't say it again.
Hampshire. So people, because we have a lot of listeners. I think they're third in our foreign countries of listening. So I felt proud that I said Hampshire. They'll probably say, no, it's Hampshire. This one's Hampshire.
Camelot is the mythical city on a hill. Like, it is supposed to be the perfect, you know, the ideal, you know, idea of a person in charge that has the power, but it is equally spread amongst its people. Everybody's happy. You wouldn't have anybody poor or, you know, everybody's looked over. Everybody, you know, even the quote unquote, what would be considered peasants, they really don't exist in Camelot. Everybody was taken care of. You know, you had knights and you had the king and you had all these quote unquote servants and all that kind of stuff. But everybody seemed, you know, the idea is, oh, everybody would be happy. Of course, that's not realistic. And so how historical would that ever be?
That's the utopian.
I did see.
But it's like, to me, it's almost like the city on the hill. It's like heaven to me. That's the idea of where you would go. Yeah. You know,
I did see a documentary. They're like trying to find Camelot if it were there. And there is one structure that they found and it's on a hill. And all that was built was one tower. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, I mean, I guess it sort of checks the boxes. Everything. Right. It's just one tower. It's not a castle, per se. I mean, it's under construction, but it was never completed.
It's the remnants of something that was never to be.
Mm-hmm. It's just amazing how far back this whole story goes. This website says 1485. Like, man.
Yeah, and I've seen stuff like in the 400 ADs and stuff.
Oh, wow. I
mean, exactly. And again,
goes way back.
Because they were saying who developed, or who, well, they say, who created the King Arthur legend, and they're saying Lamort d'Arthur by Thomas Malory, which was published in 1485. But then it says, however, this version is just a retelling of a much older King Arthur story. So
it goes, it reaches back to yesteryear. There is a
interesting
one thing I want to bring up, because we do like to bring up folklore, legends, and ghosts, right? There's a website that was interesting. It's the Paranormal Database, and it's examining folkloric paranormal and cryptozoological locations in the UK and beyond. And there's a thing on here that's Arthurian legends, folklore, and ghosts. There's one. I'm not going to go over all these, but it's interesting how many there are. There's hoof prints, and it is in Aberdovey. It's 3 miles northeast of Aberdovey, and it is it's a legend. There are supposedly hoof prints from King Arthur's horse that can still be seen imprinted in the rocks there. There is Saint Pardon, and it's a legend also.
Pardon me.
6th century, and it says this land. These words, Lan Badarn, Badarn Far was founded by Padarn. King Arthur once tried to steal Padarn's tunic. Whoever this Padarn was the people in England are like, well, of course we know what this is. Padarn's tunic, but was seen. Padarn then caused the ground to open and swallow Arthur, where the king remained until he apologized.
It's
a naughty, naughty king,
I guess.
So they've got stories. One of several ghosts reported in this. This is another one that's Aberswathinados.
Abercrombie and Fitch.
Nantino's,
yes,
house.
Sir Abercrombie and Fitch, yes.
Yeah.
Fitchius.
This happened in 1984, the same year as Ghostbusters.
There you go.
So I've got a link there. One of several ghosts reported to haunt the house. At this particular house, the cloak figure disrupted a video unit sent to shoot several TV scenes here. To such an extent, the crew refused to work after dark. The other ghosts compromised a phantom horseman and two spectral women, one of whom appears before death. The building is also thought to have once contained part of the Holy Grail. So that's kind of cool. So that goes into the Arthurian legend.
So, I mean, this is very interesting and fascinating. I get lost easily.
I do too.
Yeah,
there's so much.
I just do so. I tried, like I said, I listened to some videos, and even on the way home from work, I was listening to it. It was like a 9-minute video. I watched a 25-minute video, a 3-minute video, and some of them were like silly, like they were telling a story, but they were doing it like in a cartoonish way. And then
those are my favorite.
Some of them I can get on board with, but like, but this whole thing, I was like, I want somebody to tell it in a more serious way. So, you know, instead of just a silly,
it's almost like
I couldn't follow it anyway, and I don't.
You can read all these different stories and accounts of how the story happened, and then you can just go and write your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
what you think happened.
King Arthur. I think King Arthur, I think he started podcasting, to be honest with you.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be a good idea, right?
Yeah. Arthur Caston?
I think he's like other, you know, made-up characters. He's evolved over the years. Right. He's woven himself through time and history.
Yeah, folklore. King Arthur is who myth. You want him and need him to be.
Exactly. To be honest, when you say he's immortal, he kind of is. Again, he may not even be
still talking about him,
but we're still talking about him, right? And honestly,
like Santa Claus.
The research that you should have done was heavy on the Monty Python. Honestly,
that's sure. That's why I know. I could have just gone
clink,
from
clink,
that.
Clink,
yeah.
Clink, 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 clink.
The knights who say,
oh, my gosh.
And a flesh wound. I got to throw in all the Monty Python references real quick.
I have an image of him hopping on his one leg. Gosh. He's got one arm.
It's merely a flesh wound.
Yeah.
This English swallow or an African swallow? Here you go.
What are you going to do? Bleed on me?
Oh, I hope our creepies have seen that movie. This says.
If not, go watch that too.
Right. I just lost my train. Oh yeah, I said that in some early versions of the King Arthur legend, he defends, and we kind of talked about it, but like he defends his realm from a lot of supernatural beings such as giants, witches, mm-hmm. dragons, and even giant cats and giant boars. I'd like to see a giant boar.
So all of a sudden it doesn't
Other
seem
than
like
our show.
That's a huge pig.
It doesn't seem like myth and lore anymore.
Yeah, that's I mean, now I believe it. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why Hellboy is so cool, that they're like banishing all these monsters, but that's the same kind of idea. So.
Yeah.
And again, we're still talking about these wonderful characters like Uther Pendragon. What a name, right? Mm. Mordred. You don't get any more villainous than that, right? It's just fun.
Like, that just sounds like a grumpy old woman, though.
Doesn't it?
What's your name?
My name's Mordred.
I smoke a lot?
Yeah.
I smoke about six packs a day. And oh my
gosh. One of my favorite characters in this whole... let's say tapestry, is Merlin. I really like Merlin. Mm-hmm. I like the Merlin character. He's mysterious to
me. I had
me.
The electronic toy, Merlin. Remember that from the 80s?
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Fancy
Pants.
Memory game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Memory game, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Well, I think that was my nickname, Mr. Fancy Pants. Yeah, Merlin's interesting. It's mm-hmm. an interesting character.
Mm-hmm. Well, just a lot of mystical and spiritual type stuff surrounding with all this. You know, the whole pulling the sword out of a stone or getting it from some lady that lives in a lake or Merlin lady. And whether or not he was a wizard or whatever he may have been, you know, druid or whatever.
I kind of think about Ben Obi-Wan Kenobi, that type of... Yeah. Where maybe he kind of used smoke and, you know...
Used the right, force.
Mirror. Yeah.
the force. Wizard of Oz, pay no attention
right.
to the man behind
yeah,
the curtain.
He's trying to act like he's you know, some sorcerer. No.
We have talked about this before a little bit, that's throughout history, that's one of the things that we've done since the beginning of time is tell stories. And how does storytelling evolve? By imagination, by making things richer, by fabrication, big fish stories, right? How do you remember a story? By, you know, it being so unbelievable that it's something to look up to or something to revere or remember. And that's how things stick with us in our history. So that's how true. I see the King Arthur myth and lore and legend.
What do you do here, Merlin? Oh, I stack stones.
And well,
great.
He moved.
He's crazy. Stay away from him.
He levitated them from Africa to England, right? Isn't that what, I mean, that's
right.
That's given, right? We figured that out.
I put them in a circle.
Hence the round table, see?
Yeah.
So I tie in the stone.
Yeah. We also learned that Mother Nature like doesn't work in those kind of, you know, straight lines and all that kind of stuff. So we know that there was some trickery there.
Merlin.
The heck
of a name. Merlin.
It is.
And you know, here we are doing an episode about it. So
I think it's fun. I mean, we talk about unusual, you know, who knows? This is definitely an unusual subject. It is interesting. Like I said, when I was looking at the haunting things, I'm like, you're still talking. I mean, they're labeled as myth, lore, legend, but it really doesn't get. I mean, there are mythical figures and legends throughout history, but this is a big one. So it's fun. It's really fun. You know, when people see King Arthur, I don't know what closet you'd have to be living in that you'd be like, I don't know what that is. Who's that?
Right. Well, it's one of those stories that, like, you know. it was said that the English sort of
they believed it.
Believed it for a period of time. Yeah. You know?
1,000 years.
A long time. Yeah. Worth something.
So yeah. No fault, against them, or
no. We love
their things we find out about our history and we're like, oh, I didn't know that about it. Oh, well. Mm-hmm. So it is. It's how we move about this mortal coil, right?
I like the name Sir Galahad.
Oh, mm-hmm. Galahad. That's why I was Galahad. Trying to think. Those knights, I always, Galahad's one. I was thinking about all of them, and I'm like, I can only think of Lancelot.
Yeah, Lancelot's the big one.
It says, the best of King Arthur's knights of the Round Table is often said to be Sir Lancelot, but it is Sir Galahad who finds the Holy Grail, proving himself worthy of the title of the greatest knight.
Right. And they said that because he was the only one that was worthy or pure enough to be able to find it. So it's cool. Again, don't buy it, but.
Galahad.
Gotta
go. Oh, there's your rap.
Gala something. Rap. Yeah. Well, there you go. I'm not sure if I can contribute anymore.
Well,
but do much.
The reason I can't remember the knights are Lancelot, Gawain, Gareth, Galahad, Percival, Kay, Geraint, Tristan, a bunch of these I've never even heard of. Mordred. Yeah. So it goes on and on and on. So there's a ton of them. I don't know how they fit all at the same table.
Well, you got Christopher Knight, Bobby Knight. You know who Christopher Knight is?
I do.
Who is it? You remember?
Knight Rider,
yeah. That's right. Yes.
No, I'm no.
Who are you talking about?
The actor.
that's why I was like,
that's Michael Knight.
Michael Knight. Yeah. Oh my
Christopher
gosh.
Knight is the from Peter from or is Peter from?
Oh, here we go.
Good grief! The Brady Bunch. Thank you.
There you go.
Oh my gosh, that was I was thinking Michael Knight too. Yeah, that's why I was like,
good one, Michael Knight.
Yeah. Oh,
there's
man.
All kinds of knights. Well, who's the singer? Brian? That's Brian Knight.
Brian? Yeah. Isn't that Mick?
No, that's for Brian McKnight. Good one. Thanks for correcting me. That's good.
We are getting into a middle-aged moment, and we don't need to do that on the minis. Yeah.
People are yelling, listening to this.
They're like, stop.
End it. Quit while you're behind.
Ahead, behind.
I don't know if we've
right been in the middle.
We've never been ahead on this one.
No.
So there you go. That was interesting.
We're
to
drowning
talk about.
With the Lady of the Lake.
I was waiting for Sean.
my little quip.
Help us out, buddy.
Oh, Lordy. Good night. That's a wrap.
Yes. I have nothing else to say on that. That's a good one. That was episode middle aged number 30.
Three.
What'd I say, Larry Bird's number?
Yep. You did.
Yeah. Thanks, Nate, for saving us. Good night, everybody. We'll, until
good night,
next
folks.
Time.
Good night.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye.